So we're continuing our series on mental health and Shabbos, certain things that come up, and how we sort of, you know, by going through this, we sort of get a sense of how Halacha views mental health. So the first thing, I want to just do a few issues here. So first of all, I brought for you, when it comes to Shabbos, right, so if someone's sick, so there are different rules depending how sick they are, right? There's what's called chola sheish bo sakana, someone who's sick and they are in danger. And then there is a chola she'ein bo sakana, someone who is sick and not in danger, someone who's like bedridden, his whole body is weak, and there's michush ba'alma, he's not feeling well. And there are different categories, and there are different rules. Obviously, if you're dealing with a chola sheish bo sakana, if it's a sickness that potentially is life-threatening, so then you can set aside Torah prohibitions. So the first thing I want to, and there's also another category, like a middle category called sakanas aver, potential loss of limb. So for sakanas aver, which is more severe than a regular chola she'ein bo sakana, right? Then maybe you can set aside rabbinic prohibitions. Generally speaking, when it comes to a chola she'ein bo sakana, just someone's bedridden, you can generally set aside rabbinic prohibitions done in an unusual way. Okay, when it comes to a sakanas aver, you can set aside rabbinic prohibitions. When it comes to chola sheish bo sakana, you can set aside even Torah prohibitions. So in the context of mental health, what's considered a chola sheish bo sakana? So I just want to share with you sort of this book here.
Not just for, could you give me an example of what you would not be permitted to do?
For a chola sheish bo sakana?
No, for
chol, losing
a limb.
Oh.
You would not be able to do.
You would probably have like a non-Jew treat the person to actually do a Jew to treat it. It's potentially questionable. Maybe. It's a debate about that. You would try to knock things down to a rabbinic prohibition, if you can.
I understand.
You would try to knock things down. We try to find a way to be lenient. Obviously, you don't want someone to lose a limb, but we try to knock things down to rabbinic prohibitions. You don't even have to undergo that process we're doing with the chola sheish bo sakana. So, I want to get into the sakanas aver when we talk about a particular type of mental health disease or a mental health issue. But the first thing I want to sort of talk about is what's considered a chola sheyesh bo sakana. So he says that there could be three different, you can violate on their behalf in one of three ways. A, someone in a grave physical state whom a mental disturbance can push to the point of mortal danger. It's considered a chola sheyesh bo sakana. Let's say, so again, someone is a physical issue. You know, the classic case in halacha is if a woman's in childbirth and she asks for someone to turn on a light for her. Now, how does that help? It just helps her own mental health. I mean, she may go crazy, at least in the days of Chazal, if she doesn't have light. So that, even if it's only to settle her mind... Okay, you say that, not me. Okay, I understand. So the question is, can you sort of try to avoid it? But yeah, I hear what you're saying. So we're just saying that, like one example of chola sheyesh bo sakana is where someone has a physical potential danger and there is a mental complication that somehow we think, could cause problems. The second type, someone whose mental condition is such that they pose a potential life-threatening danger to themselves or those around them. So that would be like someone who's a schizophrenia or other psychotic disorders, bipolar 1 disorder. That's so like, let's say, if someone had a manic episode of at least 7 days, many cases of bipolar 2 disorder, severe cases of major depressive disorder. So all these situations, we would do whatever we need to do. Again, assuming a mental health professional says they need to do whatever they need to do, we would allow that. And then the third category is interesting. He says, someone whose mental condition completely prevents them from performing mitzvos, such that they have a status of shote is considered a cholo sheish bo sakana with respect to their recovery. So we actually saw this in a previous lecture, that anyone who cannot perform mitzvahs due to their mental illness, they're called a shota. Someone who's a shota, lacking any mental capacity, so they're not chayiv in mitzvahs. So the Chassam Sofer said, we saw this about the non-kosher facility. We said that, are you allowed to send someone to a non-kosher facility? I told Mandy afterwards, when I came home, my wife told me that, Yael told me that actually in Israel, they have this, people say, oh, you can get kosher food anywhere, right? And she said there's one, she said that she was told, there's one place in Tel Aviv where like they say, no, you have to take our food, you have to have non-kosher food there. Like, there's some there, you know, they feel very strong about that. But Chassam Sofer has a tshuva where he says, you can violate one Shabbos in order to observe many Shabbosos. Meaning, we're not talking about someone who's going to lose their life. We're talking about if right now someone is not obligated mitzvahs because they're called a halakhically a shota, they're lacking mental capacity, and so you would be allowed to set aside Torah prohibitions if a mental health professional felt that this was a way in which someone could perhaps leave that state of shota. So that's just an interesting thing in terms of the definition of chola sheish bo sakana. And for any of these situations, you are permitted to set aside even Torah prohibitions on Shabbos. Again, the first one is, you know, that's an early one, you know, physical suffering, and then can some mental issue, you know, cause them to go crazy and to put them in danger. A second type are these certain disorders which are life-threatening. And the third is someone who cannot perform mitzvos due to their mental capacity, so they're exempt from mitzvos, but you are violating Shabbos so they can observe mitzvot in the future. That's the unique tshuva by Chassam Sofer. He wasn't happy in the end because they were feeding him non-kosher food. There's a special issue of even if you can set aside Torah prohibitions so that they can observe many Shabbosos in the future, but to actually feed someone not kosher food, he had a problem. But here for Shabbos, presumably he would say that this is fine. So I think that's like an interesting point, just in terms of how we define chol hashish bo sakana when it comes to mental health. I want to go through another thing that may come up. This came up probably during COVID, maybe at some points. Can a mental health professional carry a cell phone on Shabbos so it can be reachable in case of an emergency? Very often we're talking about it. Someone is like, you know, people are alone and they're very nervous, very depressed, and like I think in our community, I think that what we did was, I did not carry a phone. Many rabbis proudly said, I'm carrying my phone this Shabbos or whatever, or Pesach 3 day, whatever, it was a big Yom Tov, to help people who need to call me. My phone's always open. I think what we did here was, I think every individual who was living alone, we made sure they had a buddy that would check in on them. So that way we were sort of trying to cover in that respect. But what? When there's no Eruv, it's more common. Yeah, so let's talk about where there is an Eruv. Let's talk about where there is an Eruv. So, general question, are you allowed to, can a mental health provider carry a cell phone on Shabbos? What do you think?
Yes. My niece does.
Your niece does? Okay, yes. So, how do you view a cell phone, by the way, halakhically? Is it like a rock? Is it like coins? Right? Well, you can't pick up a rock on Shabbos. Why? Right? That's muksa, right? No, there's basically, in halachic terms, you have either a kli or a food, right? You have a utensil, an implement, or a food, which, right? And then you have things which are neither a kli nor a food, so they are muksa. They are set aside not to be used. And there are certain kalim there are certain utensils or items that, even though there are items, but you know, we don't move certain things on Shabbos, right? So there are different categories, right? There's like the kli shemalachto le'iser, for example. So that's a kli that is predominantly used for a forbidden purpose. So a classic example would be a hammer, right? A hammer is predominantly used for a forbidden purpose. Use it to hammer nails. What if? But can you think of a way that it can be used for a permitted purpose?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Okay, right. But I'm saying, well, let's say we have, but break up a wall, not right. So you have, right. So you, yeah, yeah. So right. So the halacha is that for a kli shablato le'iser, you can move it litzorech gufo umakomo. You can move it for a permitted use or to clear up space. Let's say you left a heber on the dining room table, right? So for some reason, no matter how much we clean, there's always a pen on the floor every shower. I don't know, no matter how much we clean, there's always a pen on the floor. Okay. But anyway, so you can move a hammer, let's say a dining room table, because you need the place. However, if what's called mechama letzeil, from the sun to the shade, like as an example, let's say you know, there's a hammer outside and it's going to get ruined, it's going to rain, it's going to ruin that kli shabbato iser, you would not be allowed to pick it up directly. You may have to move it indirectly. I'm saying that's like an example of a kli shemalachto le'iser, a kli that is predominantly used for a forbidden purpose, but it could be used for a permitted purpose. So you can move it, you can use it for a permitted purpose, or you can use it in order for space. Another example, this is in Shin Chesif Gimel, he talks about that. But in Shin Chesif Aleph, he says there's something called Muksa Machmas Kisaron Kis, something which is Muksa because it's really, really expensive. That you would not use it for anything other than the purpose for which it's designated, and that purpose is forbidden. So he gives examples. Sakin shel shchito shel mila. You would not use a shchita knife or a mila knife. I assume they're different objects, right? You would not use a shchita knife or a mila knife for anything other than shchita or mila. So because it's an item that's so expensive, that he talks about the knife of a scribe, so that he fixes the quills. So anything that you would not use for any other purpose, other than a forbidden purpose, they are muksa, and you can't move them on Shabbos. In other words, it's more severe. Okay.
Even if you need the space.
Yeah, even if you need the space, right? So, like a rock. A rock is muksa, right? So. There's a difference between a kli shablato l'iser and muksa. Something can be muksa because it of itself is not a kli, like a rock, or something could be muksa machmas kisaron kis because it's really expensive. So there, you might be able to like shake the table in an indirect manner, but you would not be able to move it in a direct manner. That's sort of the background to this. Yeah, what's your question?
What if you have I have scissors that only use to cut vegetables?
Yeah, it's fine because that's a kli shablato l'heter. That's a kli that's used predominantly for a permitted purpose. You can even move that because you can fiddle, you can play with it. You can move it for whatever reason. Right? There's kli shemalachto leheter. There's a kli that's predominantly used for a permitted purpose. That you can move it for whatever reason. There's a kli shemalachto leiser, which is a kli that's used predominantly for a forbidden purpose. And that you can move it. Right. Right. So question is, the question is, what is a cell phone? Is a cell phone a kli shemalachto leiser? Or is a cell phone muksa machmas kisaron kis? It's something you would not use. Like the classic case, like what could you use a cell phone for? Not for telephoning. What else could you use it for? Okay, but that's also, all these things are forbidden on Shabbos. Like a paperweight. Now that's the question. Would someone use? So this is a dispute. In other words, this is a dispute. If you hold that a cell phone is a kli shemalachto le'iser, then you could carry it for a permitted purpose. What's permitted purpose? In case there's an emergency, someone's going to call you. You could totally carry it, not a problem. If it's muksa machmas kisaron kis, then it's more problematic. I'm saying like those who allow it, but we're going to give another reason why perhaps you could be lenient. So one reason. So this is a dispute. There's a dispute as to whether how you view a cell phone. And different poskim have different opinions on this. Like, is it a cheapy cell phone, expensive cell phone? Like, would you use it for some other purpose? What? The question is, would you use it as a paperweight? If you use it as a paperweight, then that's a kli shemalachto le'iser, and you can move it for a permitted purpose. I mean, you can carry it around in case someone needs to call you. If it's muksa machmas kisaron kis, so then it's more problematic. But even if you hold this muksa machmas kisaron kis, so if you turn the page, just to turn the page here, second page, it says, teva sheyeshba davar hamutar letaltel umaos. So you have a box that has something that is permitted to move, and money. Im hamos eino ikar mutil taltla. So let's say you have a container, a bag, that has both money, which is muksa, and something permitted, which is more, that which you want more, which is more chashuv, more important. So you are allowed to move that item. So if you have a bag, and then you have money and another item, the other item is more important, then you can move it, because the bag is a basis, it's a base, for something that's permitted and forbidden. So the question is, how do you know what's considered more important or not, right? So if I have this tshuva by Rav Moshe Feinstein in Orach Chaim Chelek Hei Simon Chaf Beis, so he says that he wants to know, is the important item, is it dependent, is it determined according to its monetary value or not? For example, let's say you have a bag and you have a $100 bill and a sitter. So the sitter, let's say, is not worth $100, but you would use the sitter, the sitter is more important for you because you need to use it on Shabbos. So how do you consider what is more important? So he writes here in this tshuva, we just read the English, the important item is not judged solely by its monetary value. Certainly, in the case of a prayer book and money, the sitter of the prayer book is considered more important than the money. If there are eyeglasses and money on a base, and the person immediately needs the eyeglasses are considered the important item relative to the money. It does not matter if there are thousands of dollars on the base, because the immediate need is for the eyeglasses rather than the money. Indeed, if there is an additional pair of eyeglasses, and the person does not currently need this pair, then the money is considered the more important item. If you have another pair of eyeglasses, you don't need this, then the money is more important. If there was a loaf of bread and a large sum of money, then you need the bread, because you need the bread for Shabbos. So what this all means is that, according to those who hold that a cell phone is a klishim latal isser, you can have the cell phone in your pocket, you know, and you're allowed to carry it. Case, obviously, you should tell the person only call if there's an emergency. But even those that hold muksa machlek sarn kis, the best way to go about it is to put the cell phone in a bag and have something, another item that you would use on Shabbos. Again, I don't know if that's what people do, but that seems to be. In other words, you would put any. This is not a mental health issue. Any time, let's say that you might need a cell phone, and let's say again, there's an Eruv, but it's better to have the cell phone and using cell phone for an emergency. So then you would put something that would be of a greater use, greater need on Shabbos. So again, I think there are people who feel like, you know, because we live
it's
in a...
just happened in Israel
this week. Yeah, okay. So that's very right. So my point is, when home... Right, so the question is, how far do you go? No, I agree with you.
But the rabbi said, this is the interesting side.
I mean, they said like one person per family? They said when you're going out?
That's how you live.
Okay.
If you live in a place where there's a siren warning,
right,
and then the alarm goes off,
right,
don't carry cell
phones. Right.
It's not your 10 minutes.
Right.
You live off the door.
Right.
When you get hit by from Lebanon,
right. Right. So therefore, you would need the
fact. Right. Yeah.
Is it not the general practice for getting mental health issues, just critical medical issues, that physicians who are on call, let's say, are expected not get called, generally do carry cell phones?
Right. So what I'm saying is, right. So again, if we're talking about right, so the truth is, if it's if there could be potentially life-threatening situations, like the mental health is not always a potentially life-threatening situation. If it's a potentially life-threatening situation, then there's also greater grounds to carry a
cell phone. The cell phones that you were talking about.
Right, but I'm saying if it's for like a life-threatening situation, you're carrying it because you're going to get. You know, you're on call to get potentially a life-threatening situation, there's a lot more room to be lenient. With the mental health professional, again, there could be an emergency situation. So you're right, if it would be a potentially life-threatening situation, then also you could be lenient. But what I'm saying is, even if it's like not a life-threatening situation, it still might be permitted to carry the cell phone. Like if you're a mental health professional and someone is like, you know, very depressed or whatever the case is, and they might need to call you, even if it's not, won't rise to the level of sakana, there's still ways to be lenient in this regard. But you're right, a physician, take the view it's klisha v'lachtel isser. Some may, you know, use their cell phone and carry in a bag, but probably many do not. But I'm just saying that's
in essence. I mean, practical usage. Yeah. Is that something that anybody does?
So again, probably with a doctor, since he's probably dealing with, you know, life-threatening situations, potentially those. So then maybe you're on call, and there could be. So then I think there's more grounds to be lenient than simply when there's no sakana. Yeah, then of course you can use that. Right. So here's an interesting question. We'll do two more here. What about a child with autism spectrum disorder using assistive technology for communication? Okay. So many poskim. So how do you view a child with autism spectrum disorder? He really can't communicate. So many view him as what's called a peti, pei tuf yud. Again, assuming, they say he's probably not a shota, but a shota is someone who lacks any mental capacity. Peti is someone who has significant cognitive developmental disability. He is obligated in mitzvos. So, interesting way how to look at this. You have this, I have here this Shevet Levi. If you just turn the page, we'll see the English. Vosner said, I received your letter some time ago, and only yesterday I was able to read it. I will respond briefly with fundamental points, as is my manner. You wisely asked regarding the electronic computer, whose operation, as is known, is a combination of lines electronically, and through this, the numbers and calculations are produced. You asked about Chol HaMoed. We're not going to talk about the Chol HaMoed issue. It's like writing a Chol HaMoed using a computer. But again, he wants to say for our purposes, again, we question regarding Shabbos, whether it's permitted in this case. For Adin, the Chayadim stated that forming letters is prohibited on Shabbos, even if the letters are complete. This applies only when done in a permanent manner, not in a temporary manner. In my opinion, he writes, this is in the next paragraph, regarding Shabbos, it is not merely rabbinically prohibited, but rather there may be even a Torah-level liability. Since it is completed in its proper time, it performs an action that is required in its entirety, meaning the desired writing is already considered miskayim. So he wants to argue that maybe even when you use a computer, so you are, when he's using that the board in order to create the words, so that is something permanent. And he said this is similar to someone who writes on their skin on Shabbos. The Ksosa Shulchan rules that they are liable, and it's a Torah prohibition. So Shevet HaLevi would be strict in this regard. However, others are lenient, and we're going to see for many poskim hold that it's only a rabbinic prohibition. And Dr. Abraham writes, I'll share with you two different opinions on this. Dr. Abraham writes, there does not seem to be an issur d'oraisa against using a word processor on Shabbos. When one types and the letters and words appear on the computer screen, it is through the firing of electrons on a phosphor material that coats the inner side of the screen, which lights up in the shape of the letters. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said it's not an issur k'siva from the Torah. So this is the debate amongst the poskim. When you write on a computer, is that biblical writing? Or is it simply you got a bunch of electrons that come together and it's because of all technology, it's only an Issur d'Rabbanan. Now Rav Schechter holds that he says about an individual with autism spectrum disorder who cannot communicate verbally, he says that this person is considered sakanas aver. It's like he's missing a limb. Meaning he defines sakanas aver as someone who as someone who there is a function, like part, a, I want to say a normal, a regular function of their, a regular, what we all do, what all people do regularly, this person's missing that. So he's missing speech in order to sort of, so he is considered sakonas aver. It's like missing, quote unquote, a limb, in which case he thinks that this would be, that this, that the computer screen would be permitted. Hearing aids. No, it's allowed. No, it's allowed, but I think that's like a different issue. I think hearing aids.
I know you can't adjust the issue.
forming a word.
Letter,
right.
Letter.
Right. Right. So Rav Ozer said it's permanent. It's permanent.
It's permanent.
Right. Right.
It's complete
action. Now, meaning, if you would leave it and you wouldn't touch it, it would stay forever. That's what it means. It's permanent in that regard. Right. So Rav Shachter thinks that someone who cannot communicate is considered sakanas aver, and therefore, you can certainly, use these buttons allowed to use these non-electronic boards. If you look here, actually, right here, Nafshi B'Shelasi, as for Halacha Lamasa, Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin did not permit after the child to reach the age of chinuch. At that point, they must switch to non-electronic boards on Shabbos, even if create difficulties for the child. Rav Rabinovich permitted at this age if electronic boards are necessary to communicate about the basic needs. And here, Rav Shachter views that the inability to communicate is having the same status as Sakana Sefer, for which Isur Drabanan on Shabbos, like using this device, are permitted. Rav Yuvar Shurlo does not view it as a full malacha, but it's a gross case of Uvda Dechol, since screen usage dispels the Shabbos atmosphere demanded by Shabbaton. How do we view electricity? That's a general question. How do you view the closing of circuits? How do we view that? Well, is it a Torah prohibition, a Vedic prohibition, Uvda, just not Shabbistic? He says, such writing should only be employed in case of great need, like ours, but even then, it should be limited to private settings. Rabbi Yaakov Ariel even allows adults to use these devices so long as they stay on all Shabbos and only operate via a touchscreen, because touch technology only changes the current, which is permitted on Shabbos for a cholah. He does not deem the kind of writing prohibited on Shabbos, so that would not be a reason to prohibit the device's use. Rabbi Willig only permits it before the child's bar bat mitzvah, because afterwards there's a concern of dishonoring Shabbos. Both Rabbi Elio Aberjan and Rav Asher Weiss rules if the child takes advice on their own, you don't have to stop them, but it should not be given to a minor. So you have different opinions about this, but there are a number of poskim who will allow us to give it to a young child, and I think Father Rav Shachter is a very interesting way that he looks at this individual.
Does it not depend on the severity
of autism
situation?
Of course, yeah. So I can't. They need for the machmirim. It's a big chiddush to say that it's sakana sefer. So they're saying you should use something that's non-electronic. You should find something that's non-electronic. It's not the same, but it's you should try to think of other devices. And others will say, no. You don't have to go that far, because I guess there are.
This is a known thing.
Yeah. So I'm saying my point is that there are post. What would they say? Apparently there are non-electronic boards. Apparently that's what. That's what Hankins said. Apparently, there are non-electronic boards to communicate. There could be, you can think of different. I mean, I'm not an expert in this, but you could think of ways to, communicate without, check. See, the non-electronic communication board. Okay, I'll try to do research. Let me see. Hold on, see if I can find something. Non-electronic communication boards. Let's see if they have this. Yeah. So they have autism classroom resources. So they have communication boards for non-verbal patients. So I think they also have, I think they have both. They have, a paper and pen, but it's not electronic. An alphabet board. Yeah. So it seems that there might be, I mean, pen and paper is also a problem. But so you have to think about ways that maybe some kind of board that could be temporary, it could be erased right away. I mean, when the kids play with some of these things, or that's a sketch or something. So I mean, my point is, we can think of ways to maybe make however they are. So it seems that many poskim allow it, and I found Rav Shachter's way of looking at this is very interesting. The final topic that comes up a lot on Shabbos for people who have mental health issues, some people have, is can you play music on Shabbos? Right. So what's interesting is that some Rishonim felt that there's no problem listening to music in general on Shabbos, because it's Onik Shabbos. The Rav Yah, ever the Rav Yah, who said, "Vomer ani." Someone's depressed, and the doctor feels.
I'm sorry.
So someone has major depression.
No. But how is the music generated? Does that make a difference? Are you talking about recording? Are you talking about live music? Is it the radio?
Right. I assume it's something that either a non-Jew is playing, which it's probably you know, some they should have headphones and there's music that's playing, recording. I mean, realistically, right? They have something recorded or on the internet.
So is the issue the electronics on Shabbos?
Yeah. Right. Well, and also Hashma's Kol. You're not allowed to potentially have, it's on the spirit of Shabbos to have music playing on Shabbos. Right? There's a prohibition. It's a Avshe Milsa. It's a prohibition of having loud noise on Shabbos. The Rav Yah writes that maybe, he writes here, the Rav Yah was a significant Rishon. He writes here, V'alagoy ha-menagim ekli shirim b'nisu in shari. Apparently he said, a non-Jew who plays music for a wedding is permitted. V'afil m'Yisrael omer l'lasos b'yom Shabbos shari. D'amir l'agoy shvus v'makom mitzvah shari. So apparently, if they would have a, in those days they would get married on Friday. Why would they get married on Friday? Why would they get married on Friday? Right, it's cheap. No, it's serious, because they have to make a Shabbos meal anyway. So instead, they get married on Friday, and their Friday night meal is their wedding meal. So, but they want to have music. So he says you can hire a non-Jew to play music. Amira l'nachri, and this is b'makom mitzvah simchas chasen v'kala for mitzvah. It's permitted. Ain't simcha lachasim kav below klei shir. It's not. It's not. It should be fine. You say, isn't it amir lenachri? No, but it's letzorach mitzvah. And they seem to say that klei shir is in the spirit of Shabbos, right? In other words, the Rav Yah says it is in the spirit of Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch says. I understand. So okay, if you look, okay, at the end of the day. And yesh matirin lomar la'akum lanagim ekli shir bechupos. There's some who permit to tell a non-Jew to play music during, with a musical instrument with a chuppah. If you lomar la'akum latakin ekli shir shar mishum kavod chasam mekala of oblav hachi yasser. And he says nowadays they're lenient. So the Ramah, again, we don't do it nowadays. But I'm telling there, my point is there was a point in time. There was a point. I know people did for shavu brachos, but there was a point in time. Clearly, where people were hiring non-Jews to play music for them on Shabbos. Okay, wow, yeah, sorry you missed it. So just based on this, so what Rabbi Rosenzweig writes in his book, if listening to music helps someone diagnosed with major depressive disorder, they should be allowed to leave on music and use earphones so as not to disturb those around them. And he cites all these rabbanim poskim who agree, right? And the final source is Rav Elazar Malama. This is an interesting stringency. He only permits turning. Can you turn on a TV? He only permits it when a God-fearing Torah observant daughter says it's bikuach nefesh. Anything less should not be permitted because he is of the opinion that electricity violates an issur d'oraisa. That's a whole big question. Does generating electricity violate a Torah prohibition or rabbinic prohibition? Even though employing a shinoi, like the turning on the TV in an unusual way, downgrades it to an issur d'rabbanan, he feels no general heter can be given since it's a protracted illness. Right? So what's interesting is that it seems that you can leave for someone who is very depressed, it's totally okay to leave music on for them, to listen to the music, to calm them. That's a treatment. Again, everything should be clear with a mental health professional, and it might even be okay to turn on music, maybe. But some hold that it's not. Rav Mami thinks that it's an issur d'oraisa, and obviously, because mental health is one of these things, it's not such an exact science. So we have to be careful and make sure we get experts' opinions to allow some of these things, which we don't want to get out of hand. So if I'm depressed, I want to listen to music. It needs to be done, obviously, with a respectable a mental health professional. But my point is that just like we are lenient when someone has a physical sickness on Shabbos, there are a lot of leniencies, not only for a physical sickness, but poskim are allowing this also when it comes to mental health. So these are some issues that may come up on Shabbos.